Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Tuning in for the Wednesday edition of this 25-cent program. That's a clue. That's a cue for you to subscribe to Malloy podcast downloads. You can go to MikeMalloy.com. All the information is there. It'll cost you under $60 a year, which is 25 cents a program. That's socialism. That's how we stay in business. It's democratic socialism. So, subscribe, okay? The right-wingers are going nuts trying to bust up on Obama. By right-wingers, I mean the conservatives. Frankly, although I there's a lot of stuff about Obama that I just thoroughly disagree, the argument that the bagger types and the Republicans are making is just outrageously stupid. But that's all right. I mean, these are outrageously stupid people. And I'm not going to go into detail about all the garbage that they're saying. It's just, it's kind of amusing to listen to these sick bastards go on and on and on. However, what seems to be missing from all this anti-Obama rhetoric from these hate America Republicans is any reference to their big claims a few months ago about wanting government to go away. They didn't want, they wanted government to go away. And now just about everybody in the country, especially here in the South, we talked about this the other night, where all these redneck cracker freaks live, they're all pleading and begging for government assistance. Have you noticed that? It's really something to see. The drill baby drill crowd, what has become of them? I think the point I'm trying to make, when these events occur, like this horrific death to the Gulf of Mexico that we are witnessing the death of the Gulf of Mexico, and possibly even worse than that. But when these events occur and an effort is focused on trying to stop the death of the Gulf of Mexico, trying to clean up after flooding and storms roll through Mississippi and Tennessee and dozens of people are killed, when those events occur and the aftermath of those events, where is this bitch Sarah Palin? Where is the scum suckers like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck? Where are these bastards? And of course, the answer to the question is nobody cares. The only time anybody listens to these thugs is when there is nothing of any import, nothing of any seriousness that has to be addressed by America. Any type of response from the government to these disasters, any kind of response, whether it's money or troops or materiel or I don't care what it is, aid of any sort, that's socialism. That's democratic socialism. The libertarians, the Ron Paul crowd, where are you bastards, huh? You who say the government should stay out of everything. Do you want government to stay out of these disasters? Is that what you want? Of course you don't. You all are a bunch of phonies. Your philosophies and theories might have worked back in the days when people were still walking around with clubs in their hands. I don't mean the National Rifle Association. I mean real clubs. But it doesn't work anymore. You people are real dinosaurs. And like dinosaurs, you're going to become extinct quicker than you think. But it's just kind of in a real macabre sort of way. It's funny to me to you know, listen, hello, where are you, right-winger Republicans? Where are you about stay out of our state?
We want state sovereignty. We don't want any government. Get government out. Yeah, drill baby, drill baby, drill baby.
Where are you now? Where are you? You little turds. Oh, the hoe from Wasilla and all these people talking about, we got to
drill for oil here. Yeah, we got to drill here. We got to go offshore. We got to go to Alaska. We got to go to downtown Oklahoma City. That's our oil.
How can these people be so stupid? Here we are drilling offshore. Who's doing the drilling? Who has caused this disaster? British Petroleum, not American Petroleum. British Petroleum. And besides, it doesn't make any difference if it's ExxonMobil doing the drilling. The oil doesn't get put in little containers when it's not spewing all over the Gulf. The oil doesn't get put in little containers and put aside on, some kind of oil supermarket shelf in Wichita. The oil, all oil, goes onto the international market, where it is bid on by the speculators, where the futures crowd bid it up, bid it down, where Goldman Sachs can jerk it around and send it up and send it down and make money on the winners, make money on the losers. But these dumb-assed Republicans talking about our oil. No, boys and girls, it's not our oil. It is oil that these international, some of them American-based oil companies, discover and then punch holes in the surface of the earth and then bring it up. And do you think the people in Chicago get the oil? Is that what you dumb Republicans think? That's what you want people to think. But what you're displaying is a kind of ignorance that is just, it's beyond definition, beyond definition. So our oil, your oil, I'm sorry. No, it's not. It belongs to the oil companies. And if it winds up in the United States to further pollute our air, to further our quest for more things, it's because somebody bid on it. It's because somebody bought it and brought it to the United States, you crazy bastards. You know, just Sarah Palin talking about Alaskan oil. Either she is incredibly, I don't know why I'm talking about her. Either she's incredibly stupid or she thinks her listeners are, and I think it's both. Any oil sucked up out of the Alaska oil beds or the Gulf of Mexico or off the East Coast of the United States goes into the international market. Now, all of this is just garbage talk because I don't see how we're going to survive this thing that's occurring in the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know. Maybe we will. And we're going to talk about it a little bit later on tonight. I've got an Uncle Mike story corner that is kind of scary. It really is. Kind of scary. All right. We have a break coming up here. So anyway, if any teabaggers are listening tonight, you phony, hypocritical little thugs, every single one of you. You really are. You're just phony, cowardly, hypocritical little thugs. Your oil, our oil, America's oil. Oh, stop it. And I'm just waiting for the governors of Mississippi and Tennessee and Louisiana and Alabama and Florida and any place else where this death of the Gulf of Mexico is going to occur. I'm just waiting to hear any of those governors. How about Piyush Jindal, the governor of Louisiana? Why aren't you saying, Piyush, that you don't want any government help? Why aren't you saying, well, you know, we don't want that. No, we want to be sovereign. You phony little bastards. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yeah. dog's mortal coil, and all the things you taught me.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Al sent this in to me. He wants to know if stuff like this happened much when Junior was our illegitimate president. He says, I don't think so. Second question, so then who are the bat guano crazy contingent? The tea baggers? The teabagger conservatives, that's who. And what he's got here, one of these oath keepers, I don't know if you all have heard about these sorry bastards, oath keepers. These are people who are in the military or the police department or state troopers, and they're going to keep their oath to protect and defend the Constitution. You're damn right. And if that means going out and shooting people, well, that's the way it's going to be. And as David Nywert has at, is this Crooks and Liars? Probably is. To listen to right-wingers in the wake of the arrest of the would-be Times Square bomber, you'd think that every liberal media outlet on the planet had tried to pin the attempt on the teabaggers. I mean, where would anyone get the idea that right-wing Tea Partying extremists might potentially be involved in violent domestic terrorism? Meanwhile, no one is reporting much on the arrest earlier this week by the FBI of Darren Huff, an oath keeper from Eek, Georgia, who is upset by the arrest a few weeks ago of another patriot believer who tried to conduct a sovereign citizen-style arrest in Tennessee. Yes, well, you know, the law has broken down here in the South. And this is the way it's been reported. A Georgia man has been arrested in Tennessee. Authorities say he headed to Madisonville, Tennessee, armed and prepared to take over the courthouse. Darren Huff stands charged of traveling in interstate commerce with intent to incite a riot, transporting in commerce a firearm in the furtherance of a civil disorder. The FBI says this freak traveled to Tennessee armed with a pistol on his hip and an assault rifle in his truck, intent on carrying out citizens' arrests of 24 federal, state, and local officials, and on seeing that another man did not face trial for trying to do the same thing. Oh, my God. There was a video out, and you could see what happened on April 1st. One of these free man-style sovereign citizens, a guy named Walter Francis Fitzpatrick, after writing up citizens' arrest warrants for state, local, and federal officials, had entered the Madison County Courthouse and attempted to make a citizen's arrest of a grand jury foreman. Instead, deputies there wound up arresting the freak, Fitzpatrick, and he was charged with disorderly conduct, inciting to riot, disrupting a meeting, and resisting arrest. This outraged the freak here in Georgia, Huff, a loud and proud member of the Oath Keepers, who posted the video of Fitzpatrick's arrest with a rant demanding that his fellow patriots leap into action to defend him. So on April 20th, Huff headed to Madisonville with his big black pickup truck emblazoned with the Oath Keepers logo. Yeah! In the back, he had ammo and several weapons, including a semi-automatic assault rifle. He was pulled over in Sweetwater, Tennessee, and explained and detained and later released on his own recognizance. As the story explains, the FBI interviewed a bank manager who said Huff told him on April 15th that Fitzpatrick had been falsely arrested. Huff was in the Georgia militia, and that 8 or 9 other militia groups were headed to Madisonville to take over the city. Yee-haw! The bank manager said Huff told him he'd see Huff's actions on the new news. You watch your TV, I'm going to be on the new news, I really am. FBI agents interviewed Huff at his home, and Huff said he would be traveling to Tennessee to help Fitzpatrick get the charges against him dropped.
Huff told agents there'd be no violence. Still, he told agents he planned to travel with his Colt 45 handgun and an AK-47 rifle. Then on April 20th, officers in Madisonville reported numerous individuals in possession of openly displayed and concealed firearms in the area around the courthouse. More on this when we come back. I mean, Jesus, God. And we're worried about some doofus in Madison Square Garden. I mean, Madison Square Garden. Oh, no. In Times Square, who apparently can't even light a firecracker. I'm not trying to make light of that. That was serious business. But and here we have our own domestic white boy terrorists from Georgia. We've got crackers. We've got all these Ritz crackers running around. These not Ritz crackers. What are those white ones? Saltines. We have a whole state full of saltines down here running around. Well, I'm going to go up there and make a citizen's arrest. I'm part of Oath Keepers, and it's my patriotic duty to go up there to Tennessee and arrest them or something. I got my AK-47 and my Colt 45 and my finger up my nose and an arrow through my head, and I'm ready to go. We'll be right back.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So what we're talking about here is some freak from here in Georgia, one of these Oath Keeper morons,
who have vowed to protect and defend something.
Where were these rat bastards during 8 years of Bush-Cheney? I don't know. Probably hiding. Because they are essentially cowards, but I think what they prefer is a white fascist. The last thing they want is a dark-skinned president. They'd rather have a white fascist like Hitler or, who else, Stalin. You know, somebody like that. Oath Keepers, my ass. So this guy from here in Georgia named Huff, he cranks himself up, probably literally, because people like this eat a lot of methamphetamine, a lot of homemade speed, gets himself cranked up,
loads up with his guns, gets in his big-ass pickup truck, and drives up to Tennessee, where he's immediately busted.
Anyway, FBI agents had observed this freak leaving his home around 6:15, this particular morning. Tennessee Highway Patrol officers pulled him over in Sweetwater, Tennessee, for traffic violations, violations of registration law and following too closely. I mean, they're such dumbasses, aren't they? So the trooper said Huff volunteered that he planned to travel to Madisonville to take over the courthouse and arrest people that he termed domestic enemies of the United States engaged in treason.
And he was going to turn those arrested over to state police to place in jail. Well, now the state police have him.
The troopers said Huff told them if they didn't have enough people on April 20th to do all they planned on that day, they'd be back in 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah, if we don't have enough, if my boys don't show up, we'll be back.
The troopers said Huff also told him he was ready to die for his rights and that he would not consent to a search of his truck.
You're not going to search my truck.
Then on April 21st, Huff recorded a radio broadcast talking about his traffic stop and saying he did have weapons and ammunition with him. As a result, the FBI believes Huff had both the intent and means to carry out threats of violence. The FBI arrested Huff in Tennessee. It appears Huff may have gone to the grand jury foreman's house on Saturday and effected his own citizen's arrest. Huff is now out on bond. Now, where would anyone get the idea that these white teabaggers might indulge in an act of domestic terrorism? Dumb jerkwads. I just... See, this is what happens when you have this many people out of work.
I'm an oath keeper. I'm going to go out there and arrest people because I took an oath to arrest people. I'm going to try to get a couple of queers, too. Not to beat them up, to play with them.
Daryl in Las Vegas writes, Mike, I listen to you every night and I feel the frustration that you display on your radio show. With so much going on in our world right now, you would think teabaggers would stop with their insanity, think about what's happening, and declare that the joke was on them. Just today I saw a truck in a parking lot at Walmart with the words, God bless Glenn Beck, that this guy had painted on both sides of his truck. I'm telling you, Glenn Beck is like Jim Jones. Eventually, he is going to kill himself, but he's going to take about 3,000-4,000 people with him. You watch. Darrell writes, the bottom line is that there is no helping the clinically insane. Glenn Beck should feel the shame of himself for creating a circus around our political process, especially when he saw that people were taking him serious. Darrell, that's not going to happen. Glenn Beck is making lots of money. He's become a multimillionaire by jerking around these dumbass teabagger types, okay? The man owned the truck said, and I quote, I could give a flying crap about the political process. Or was that Beck? Making money, on the other hand, is to be taken very seriously, and controversy is its own coinage. We're an entertainment company. Yeah, I guess that was Beck that said that. What scares me is if I was to expose this quote to these teabaggers, would they accept it, or would they say I got that from a liberal blog site, despite the fact that it came from Forbes magazine? I love to go to magic shows and try to figure out how a trick is done. The biggest trick I've yet to figure out is how corporate entities have figured out a way to make fake grassroots dummies fight with them instead of against them. How about the mind trick where I live in a trailer park and believe that someday I will live in a mansion if I continue to vote Republican? So again, I understand your frustration with everything that's happening on our planet. But as long as there are Republicans, I can never see anything positive coming to us. The sad thing about my outlook, Mike, is that I'm only 31. Yeah, that is sad. But it's sadness born of reality, right? God. Yeah, anybody who takes any of these baggers who think that Glenn Beck is their savior, I think you people will get eventually what's coming to you because of your monumental ignorance. But in the meantime, he plays you like a harmonica. I mean, you people are just so willing to be sheared over and over and over again. You're like mindless sheep. Oh, my God. I mean, here, do me again. Shear me again. Who's next? Sean Hannity. Oh, take me. Take the money from the soldiers, dead soldiers. Take the money from their widows and orphans. Ah, where's Limbaugh? Oh, Rush, I love you. You're a goddamn junkie and a drug addict, but I love you. I love you, man. I love you. I like to get my arms around you and hug all that blubbery fat and just tell you how much I love you. And now it's Glenn Beck. Oh, Glenn, I seed you cry on the electric television there. You had tears coming down your eyes because our republic is dying. Oh, Glenn. You people are crazy. Oh, the latest Christian crap. Franklin Graham again. First of all, Barack Obama stopped in there. We told you about that. Stopped in to their little Blue Ridge mountain home up there in North Carolina. Beautiful country. Trust me, it is if you've never been there. But they've got some really strange people, Ridge Runners, of which Billy and Franklin Graham are two of the more well-known. Ridge Runners, you got to watch out for them, man. Anyway, Franklin and Billy Graham met with Barack Obama and afterward raised with Obama his frustration over the Pentagon's decision last month to uninvite him from a national prayer day at the military complex. After his conversation with the president, Franklin said Obama told him he was going to look into it. He's going to look into it. Yeah. All right, sit down, white boy. I'll look into it for you, okay? Calm yourself down. Go read your Bible. Go out there and back and pick some blueberries. I'll look into it. I'm the president. I'll look into it. Go sit down. Take a break. Do you have to go to the bathroom? Okay, Franklin, bye-bye. Anyway, the president has not moved quickly enough or in the right direction for this freak. And with the National Day of Prayer set for, is it tomorrow? Is tomorrow National Day of Prayer? Amen? Hallelujah! Ah! With tomorrow the National Day of Prayer, and with the nation riveted on last week's near miss Times Square bombing, Franklin Graham has been ramping up his public criticism of Obama with language that is as politically explosive as anything his father ever said. On Monday, for example, Graham accused Obama of giving Islam a pass, and said the revoking of his invitation to the prayer service was, quote, a slap to all evangelical Christians, unquote. No, Franklin, it wasn't. It was a slap to your bony, ugly, drug-addled ass. How long were you on cocaine, Franklin? How long were you whoring around all over the planet? How many drugs did you run up your nose, huh? You are now cocaine crazy, Franklin. It's not a slap to all evangelicals. It's a slap to you, you freak. Why don't you just stay up in those mountains up there in Tennessee? Go grow yourself some coca plants. Set up a meth lab down there. Billy doesn't get around anymore. I mean, he just sits in his rocking chair drooling all day waiting for Jesus to get him. So why don't you go into the basement there, you freak, and make yourself up some of that hillbilly heroin stuff, huh, Franklin? Ah! He went on to say, I am being restricted from my religious rights and from what I believe. Hey, dumbass, you've been told you can't go to the Pentagon. The Pentagon has to be government property. There is a separation of church and state. But aside from that, your religious rights have not been restricted. Go stand outside the Pentagon, you freak, and say anything you want. Take a little bag of methamphetamine with you and run it up your nose and stand there and just babble on, talk about snakes and go into tongues and look at them bugs crawling around and hallelujah, God is coming and Barack Obama was born in Kenya and he won't let me come into the Pentagon. Ooh, get these things off of me. Oh my God, how did these spiders and things get on me? Ah! Franklin Graham, here's to you, buddy. You know, I have a word for you, Franklin. I can't say it on the air, but this is what I think of you. We'll be back.
Old 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jacket, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Just a little bit more on this psychopath, Franklin Graham, who has, way burned out all his brain synapses from all the cocaine he did. Yesterday, Graham told USA Today that if Barack Obama does not order the Pentagon to include him in the prayer service, quote, it will be a slap in the face to of all Christians, end quote. And he said he would pray in front of the Pentagon if in protest if he were not reinvited. Well, that's what I just said. Now you're thinking, Franklin, every once in a while when you've done too much coke, a thought will get through, a real thought. Ah. In the interview in USA Today, Franklin also renewed his criticism of Islam, saying, Muslims do not worship the same God the Father I worship. Yes, they do. But, the Father thing in there, I see. Okay. Well, actually, Franklin, you coked out freak. The Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims all worship the same God. That's why you people are out of your goddamn minds, because you're always killing each other, right? But anyway, he went on to say, he took a swipe at Hinduism, saying, now get this. Now tell me this guy is not drugged out of his mind. Tell me this is not somebody whose brain has been burned into a cinder from too much coke. Listen to this. No elephant with 100 arms can do anything for me. That's his take on Hinduism, right? No elephant with 100 arms can do anything for me. None of their 9,000 gods is going to lead me to salvation. We are fooling ourselves if we think we can have some big kumbaya service and all hold hands and it's all going to get better in this world. It's not going to get better. Well, Franklin, you're probably right, but not for the reasons you think you're right, okay? It's not because there are homosexuals running around. It's not because there are still people who like to do cocaine like you did. Oh, Jesus, did you do cocaine, right, Franklin? Woo! It's because people of your ilk have destroyed the earth. Now, if you're waiting to step off this earthly coil into some little heavenly paradise where, you know, you get to play a harp and have sex with 72 virgins or whatever you believe and see that 100-armed elephant, got news for you, Franklin. When you die, you are going to step into darkness. Ah, what a freak. What a freak. Franklin Graham. Well, you know, look at the children of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You talk about a messed up group. All three of his living kids, Dr. King's kids, are just screwballs. They're just total screwballs. They fight over the money from the King estate. They sell his papers. Look at Franklin Graham. I mean, here's a guy, Billy Graham, who's had a direct phone line to Jesus for 50 years, 60, 70 years. And Franklin keeps getting a dial, you know, get a busy signal. Every time Franklin tries to dial God, hello, God, God, you know, he gets a busy signal. And then he goes, Dad, what's Jesus's number? And he tries Jesus. He gets Jesus. Jesus says, Franklin, you really piss me off. You really piss me off. Go sit down. Go do a line. Whatever you want to do. Get off my phone. That's got to be rough. You know what I'm saying? That's got to be rough. So there's old Franklin, desperate to be acknowledged by his dad. And, of course, his dad is just sitting around in the rocking chair drooling, desperate to be recognized by God or Jesus. And God or Jesus keep ignoring him. The only thing Franklin hears are those voices in his head. I talked to Jesus today. No, you didn't, Franklin. You talked to yourself. Oh, no. I was out back in the little house behind the house, and I was sitting back there, and I reached up for a corn cob, and all of a sudden I heard the Lord. No, you didn't, Franklin. You heard yourself. Oh, poor Franklin Graham. Miserable bastard. Speaking of that, this is from Wes in Portland. Mike, I've been listening to you on and off for 3 years or so. When I first started listening, I was an evangelical of 46 years, having earned a Bachelor of Theology and served as a missionary in Europe. When I returned to live in America after 17 years, I was shocked by how right-wing and anti-science the evangelical community was, and it prompted me to take a sharp turn left in my politics and worldview. I would listen to your program and get upset whenever you used what I deem profanity, especially in the name of Jesus. I would turn off your program. Well, in the last 2 or 3 years, I started seriously examining my evangelical faith, quote, and found it seriously lacking in many areas. The concept of hell, all the OT stories, what's OT? Which are laughable if taken literally. Oh, Old Testament. And all the contradictions in the New Testament gospel narratives about the life of Jesus. Long story short, I am now a confirmed agnostic and stopped calling myself a Christian over a year ago. I now appreciate your approach so much more. Your knowledge of the Bible and the evangelical culture gives you a solid platform from which to expose the foibles and hypocrisies of American Christianity. I understand now like I never did before. Wes. I won't say what town Wes is in. He puts in parentheses, not completely out yet because of my elderly believing mother. Out, you mean out of Christianity or out because of your sexual orientation? I don't know. Anyway, bless you. Bless you, Wes. Bless you, my son. I'll tell you what, Wes, if you listen to this program, it's a wonder you have anything left to believe in. But that's all right. I love you, brother. I love you, brother. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. True Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in or for sticking around, whatever you've done. If you are a Republican, hold on to your ass, because if you don't, it will fly off your body during this program if you happen to be listening. Email from Prairie 2. Subject line is 2.7%. He, of course, is our economic affairs correspondent. He writes, an ongoing study of unemployed people conducted by Rutgers University has found that only 21% of those who were recently out of work as of last August had found work by this March. Two-thirds remained unemployed by the government's count, and the rest of the jobless had either gone back to school or retired early. Of those who are working, only 13% have full-time jobs, and most have taken substantial cuts in pay and benefits to get those. That's 13% of 21% of the people surveyed had a full-time job. The math on this comes out to 2.73%. In other words, out of every 1,000 people who were jobless last August, only 27 people have found full-time work. And that doesn't mean a good job either. Can you say fries with that? For older workers, the numbers were almost twice as bad. Welcome to Walmart. The number of people who have been looking for work for more than 6 months has jumped from 48% to 70% since last August, with 414,000 added just in March. Contrary to the right-wing talking point about people are staying unemployed for the free money, only 40% of the jobless in August were eligible for benefits. To continue living, 70% were spending retirement funds, 56% borrowed money from family or friends, and 45% ran up credit cards to get by. 42% skimped on medical care, 20% moved in with family or friends, and 18% are visiting soup kitchens. 90% rate their financial situation as fair at best, and more than half now describe themselves as being poor. Over half of the unemployed have lost their jobs for the first time, even though 72% believed that their jobs were permanent. The axe dropped suddenly, with 80% receiving notice of 2 weeks or less. Just 15% of the unemployed received any severance pay, and virtually none was offered retraining for another job. 80% do not believe there's any chance of returning to their previous jobs. 75% say they would take a cut in pay just to return to work, and a similar number would be willing to change careers. Only half have been granted an interview. A quarter of laid-off workers were making more than $75,000 a year, but the American dream is now gone. There are millions of people who have used up all their reserves, and their situation is only getting worse. Prairie 2. His website is prairie2.com. Republicans are denying that anyone in their party ever said drill, baby, drill. It's astonishing. Justine in Maryland sent this to me. Senators Kyle and Pat Roberts, Kyle of Arizona, where all the crazy people are now fenced in. I don't mean everyone who's in Arizona is crazy, but it is where all the crazy... Well, no, that's not true, because we have them in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Virginia, South Carolina. Isn't it funny? Those are all states that were in the old Confederacy. Oh, my. In the wake of the massive BP oil spill, Senate Republicans are disowning the catchphrase, "Drill, baby, drill!" claiming that Republicans never endorsed it. Senator John Kyle, Republican fruitcake from Arizona, and Senator Pat Roberts, mushmouth Republican from Kansas, attempted to distance themselves and their party from the phrase yesterday, pretending not to know who popularized it, and dismissing the slogan as something from, quote, "Oh, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know. Do you remember, Pat?" "No, I don't remember, John." "Oh, well, damn." Kyle said, quote, "That was not a Senate Republican phrase. I think there was a candidate that used that. I think our phrase was drill here, drill now, meaning here in the United States, and as quickly as oil and gas leases are going." End quote. Yeah, drill here in the United States, that means it's our oil. Right. Roberts said Republicans were always uneasy with the drill, baby, drill catchphrase. Roberts said, quote, and listen to this, "I don't know about that slogan. The slogan was what, 2 or 3 years ago? And basically we had a lot of opposition to it anyway." End quote. I like John Kyle. "I think there was a candidate that used that." It's hard to believe that Senator Kyle couldn't think of which candidate used the phrase. Of course, it was Republican presidential nominee John McCain, who also happened to be a Republican senator. He and Vice President nominee Sarah Palin made the slogan the Republican battle cry of the 2008 campaign. And when Palin, the hoe from Wasilla, was in debates with Biden, she even corrected Biden during their debate when he misquoted the slogan, telling him, "The chant is drill, baby, drill." McCain, meanwhile, told a crowd chanting the phrase, "You're right, pal. Drill, baby, drill. Drill offshore and drill now." Way to go, McCain, you filthy bastard. Drill offshore. How's that drill, baby, drill thingy working out for you there, Salen, or Sarah Palin, whatever the hell your name is? See, Sarah Palin doesn't care any more than Glenn Beck cares how many people he convinces to go bomb and kill and murder in the United States. These people don't care. They're in it for the money. You think Sarah Palin cares about what is happening in the Gulf? You think Glenn Beck gives a tinker's damn about how many people he inspires to go arm themselves and make citizen arrests and put bombs in cars and, you know, stuff like that? And, you know, as a matter of fact, there didn't seem to be much opposition to the slogan when then-future Republican National Committee Chair Michael Steele introduced it at the 2008 Republican National Convention. The activists in the crowd immediately began chanting the slogan and erupted in chants of "drill, baby, drill" throughout the event, egged on by people like Rudy Giuliani. The chant even interrupted McCain's speech at points. But no, the Republicans will tell you, "We don't know anything about that." Oh. See, I've told you before, Truth Seekers, Republicans, all Republicans, and especially the office holders, but all Republicans are lying, cowardly bastards. Liars, cowards, bastards. That's what they are. Oh. All right, we're going to take a break and come back, and I'm going to entertain you some more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
In the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big Big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
Monkey-free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. This is from Alex in Oregon. Mike, a couple of thoughts on this oil tragedy in the Gulf. First, my new bumper sticker. The oceans, not too big to fail. Second, to help listeners understand the depth of the problem, no pun intended, it may be helpful to paint a picture. Here it is. The oil volcano is spewing oceans of oil into the ocean itself. This is as toxic to all life there, as much as a planetary firestorm would be toxic to human beings. Wish we could use this travesty and tragedy as a springboard for humans to actually learn something, to finally wean ourselves from fossil fuels, to make a massive switch to green energy now, and to also take the opportunity to remove money from politics something that's every bit as devastating and toxic to we the people. Take care, Alex in Oregon. Here's the horror to me, and when we come back, we're going to have Uncle Mike's Story Corner that I would like you to, I'd like to share with you, because it's about the food chain in the Gulf of Mexico. But I think the reality of the situation in the Gulf of Mexico, it's too horrifying to contemplate. Late today, it's my understanding, or at some point today, BP managed to get one of the three, now there's three leaks, capped, and it did nothing as far as reducing the flow of this poison into the ocean. On the way to this former drilling platform is a cap, a dome, whatever they want to call it. They're going to attempt the impossible. First of all, sink it a mile under sea and then make it tight enough that it's going to stop the oil from spewing out into the Gulf. And then the oil is supposed to go up a pipe, and they're going to harvest the oil in a tanker above the wellhead. I don't think that no matter how this turns out, and it can only turn out badly, it's just a matter of how badly, I don't think it's going to have the slightest effect on our addiction to oil and fossil fuel. I don't think it's going to wake anybody up. We Americans, specifically and generally, we humans, have this incredible propensity for denial and avoidance. We pretend. We invent religion so that we can pretend we're not really going to die. We're going to pretend that we're the one organism on Earth that can have eternal life if we just follow a certain religion. We also pretend that something like this that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico can be fixed. And then when it's not fixed, or even if it is fixed, we pretend that nothing happened. We deny that we are tampering with the very essence of life on this planet. You know, there's no life in some great by-and-by in the sky. It's all here. It's all now. And this is it as far as human beings and the other interwoven life forms on this planet are concerned. This is it. You know, this idea of, oh, well, we're all going to rapture, so it doesn't matter. Or some of us are going to rapture. Not that goddamn Malloy, but some of us are. No, you're crazy. You're just bat guano crazy. And anybody that believes that nonsense, that gives you license to do anything you want to pollute and corrupt and destroy and poison this planet because you think you're going to get off of it. Well, I got news for you, Bubala. No, you're not. But anyway, I try to force myself not to think about this during the day because denial is something that I've got to have. I've got to have avoidance and denial in order to stay alive, in order to keep my mind from just breaking into a million pieces, especially where it concerns what has happened to our country, our social system, our political system, our environment. If I stop and think about this stuff, just like you, I mean, when I say I know you feel the same way. If I stop and think about it too long, I'll just go absolutely gibbering, drooling crazy, like Franklin Graham. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Eastern, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, and it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. It's a nice spring night here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I hope it's pleasant where you are. Cuddle up with your blankie and your teddy. Whatever you cuddle up with, while Uncle Mike once again brings you to Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's story is entitled Concerns Up and Down the Food Chain, and it's written by Leslie Kaufman. As the oil spill from the deepwater horizon spreads across the Gulf of Mexico, environmentalists and government officials have been working frantically to protect shoreline habitat, like this island, Breton Island, in the Breton National Wildlife Refuge, 8 miles off the coast of Louisiana. Breton Island, with its hundreds of nesting birds, has been protected by orange booms, as have many other areas of delicate estuaries and wetlands. But biologists are increasingly alarmed for wildlife offshore, where the damage from a spill can be invisible but still deadly. And they caution that because of the fluidity between onshore and offshore marine communities, the harm taking place deep at sea will come back to haunt the shallows, whether or not they are directly hit by the slick. The Gulf's deeper water harbors 10 species of threatened sharks, 6 species of endangered turtles, manatees, whales, and innumerable fish. It is also a temporary home for the eggs of dozens of species of fish and shellfish, whose offspring spend their earliest days floating along currents at the surface of the water, the very layer where most of the oil settles. There, the effects can be devastating. Studies from previous spills show, like whales so drugged and disoriented by noxious petroleum fumes that they can drown, and tiny translucent organisms whose bodies are literally burned from the inside out as the sun heats the fuel they have ingested. Christopher Mann, with the marine program of the nonprofit Pew Environmental Group, said, quote, "Unfortunately, we've had a lot of experience in how oil affects marine life, ecosystems, coastal communities, and fisheries. The iconic images of soiled seabirds are just the tip of the iceberg, because oil spills affect life up and down the food chain." End quote. Take the blue crab, which along with shrimp is among the largest fishing crop out of Louisiana. When molting, the crabs are known as soft shells and are immensely popular in restaurants up and down the East Coast. They also serve as food for other sea creatures like redfish and certain species of turtles. Although thought of as a coastal animal, the crabs breed at sea. As the water warms, females leave the protection of the coast for perhaps the only time in their lives and go out to shoals in the Gulf to disperse fertilized eggs. The eggs hatch, and billions of tiny crabs, invisible to the naked eye, drift for 40 days along the currents in the deep sea before ending up back in the marshes. Many of the shoals favored by the crabs are already covered in oil, said Kaz Taylor, professor of ecology and evolution at Tulane University, who is studying their migration patterns. "It can't be good," she said. Spring is mating and spawning season for almost everything in the Gulf. Fill a jar with plankton from the local waters in the spring, and it will typically contain the larva of 80 species. All the eggs and hatchlings are surface dwellers with almost no ability to swim away from the slick. Jeffrey Short, Pacific Research Director for Oceana, a nonprofit organization that works for marine preservation, said, quote, "Eggs and larvae that dwell near the sea surface are especially vulnerable." The components of crude oil, he added, can produce developmental deformities at low concentrations, and any such deformities are ultimately lethal to organisms in the wild. So far, there have been few documented animal casualties of the deepwater horizon spill, though rumors of dead manatees and whales abound. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said that its planes had spotted numerous species of dolphins and turtles in areas now covered by the oil slick. Since Sunday, 30 turtles have washed up dead on beaches in Gulfport, Mississippi, an unusually high number even for this time of year when they are migrating. But Moby Solange, executive director of the Institute for Marine Mammal Studies in Gulfport, said that in a preliminary examination, the oil did not appear to be the cause of death. Full necropsies of the animals are being completed. Still, Michelle Kelly, Turtle and Marine Mammal Standing Coordinator for Louisiana, said she's worried. Ms. Kelly said, quote, sea turtles are more prone to ingest this stuff, end quote. Whales and dolphins that must come up through the oil to get air are likely to suffer skin and eye irritation. In some cases, they may breathe in the toxic fumes of evaporation. In areas where oil is viscous, the marine mammals can risk having their skin and eyes irritated. More rarely, they risk breathing toxic fumes from the evaporating oil and become drugged and sleepy. The fumes are particularly dangerous when the crude oil is fresh because some strong toxins evaporate early. With a one-time spill, the slick gets less dangerous over time, but in the Gulf, where the well has not been capped, there's a constant supply of new vapors. Dr. Solange said he was worried for dolphins. He said they have to be awake to breathe. If they become anesthetized, they will die. If they become intoxicated by fumes, they won't survive. Even normal feeding might expose sea creatures to harm from the spill. Seagrass and other vegetation covered in oil are ingested by fish that are then eaten by bigger fish and finally by manatees and other marine species. It is this food chain effect that worries the National Wildlife Federation. Larry Schweiger of that organization said, quote, it is not a question of whether all these species will be affected now. The question is when. Another Uncle Mike Story Corner. This one a horror story. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Our writer tonight was Leslie Kaufman, and this appeared in the New York Times yesterday. It is 42 past the hour. Bob in Pasadena, California writes, I read the White House timeline of the response to the oil leak situation on their website. I noticed that they say they have dispatched nearly 200 ships and more than 7,500 Navy and Coastal Guard personnel to the Gulf to deal with the situation. However, nowhere did they say they have sent a single deep-diving manned submarine of the kind operated by the Office of Naval Research. It seems very strange to me. No effort has been made to use these subs, which have powerful hydraulic arms and are able to operate safely at depths up to 13,000 feet for many hours, instead of relying on tiny robot subs that don't have the ability to shut the valves on the blowout preventers at the seafloor. In 2000, the Office of Naval Research submarine Alvin did a survey of the seafloor in the Gulf of Mexico in exactly the same area where the BP well is located. So the area is very familiar to Navy submarine crews. The Alvin is the same sub that discovered the Titanic at a depth of 12,500 feet with no problems and successfully retrieved a hydrogen bomb off the seafloor near Spain. With such a capable deep-diving vehicle available, why has the White House allowed BP to screw around for 2 weeks with tiny robots that have only limited ability to function when they could have sent the Alvin or a similar sub within the first 3 days of the oil leak being discovered? Bob in Pasadena. Wish I had an answer, pal. I surely do. Now, I have a synopsis sent to me by Tony in Maine of all the stuff that has he went to all sorts. He did a lot of research. He tried to avoid mainstream or corporate media sources because they're not telling the truth about the magnitude of this growing story. So when we come back, I'm going to share some of the stuff that Tony has found in doing his research. And then for the final hour of the program tonight, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. So stick around. We still have lots of fun and frivolity coming. I'm Mike Malloy. We're going to open up the lines after the break. Anyway, this is what Tony in Maine came up with. He did a bunch of research. He tried to stay away from corporate media sources. First, a BP official told members of Congress in a closed-door meeting that the oil leak in the Gulf could be spewing as much as 60,000 barrels of oil a day. That's 2.5 million gallons. Well over the earlier BS they told us of 5,000 barrels a day. Before that, it was 1,000 barrels a day. That's according to reports Wednesday on MarketWatch.com. Number two, from the Huffington Post, a Guardian analysis, that's the Guardian of the UK, found that BP's green campaign, remember that? Beyond Petroleum. Remember when that sweet overemphasizes their investments in alternative forms of energy, when those investments are just a blip on their history of huge investments in and profits from fossil fuel energy. In the first quarter of 2010, BP took in $73 billion in revenue. $72.3 billion of that came from the exploration, production, refining, and marketing of oil and natural gas. The rest came from solar and wind energy. Number three, a ProPublica report last week chronicles BP's involvement in some of the biggest oil and gas disasters of the past 5 years due to their negligence. In 2005, an explosion at BP's Texas oil refinery left 15 workers dead and injured 170 others. The cause? BP had ignored its own safety regulations and left a warning system disabled. In 2006, 267,000 gallons of crude oil spread into Alaska's Prudhoe Bay due to a tiny hole in the company's pipeline. The company had been told to check the pipeline in 2002, but ignored the warning. The spill was not even discovered until 5 days after it occurred and was the largest in the region's history. There's more here. And I remember what we've talked about on this program. Capitalism doesn't give a damn how many people die. They couldn't care less. As a matter of fact, the one major expendable cog in the wheel of capitalism is human labor. That's the part that has the least effect on decisions that are made to increase the capitalist entity's profit. Human labor is the part that they just flick aside. So when people die as a result of these corporations' incompetence, it means nothing. It means more to them if they lose, for example, an oil platform. That's serious business. The 15 people that died in the explosion means nothing. Number four, U.S. law may limit how much BP has to pay for damages, such as lost wages and economic suffering in the Gulf Coast oil spill, despite President Obama's assurances that taxpayers will not be on the hook. A law passed in response to the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska makes BP responsible for cleanup costs, but the law sets a $75 million limit on other kinds of damages. Economic losses to the Gulf Coast are likely to exceed that. In response, several Democratic senators introduced legislation Monday to raise the liability limit to $10 billion, though it would not apply retroactively. The source for that is Cleveland.com. Yeah, after Exxon destroyed the coast and destroyed everything in the Exxon Valdez, what's the first thing that happens? Let's get some laws passed quickly. Got to limit the liability. The people in Alaska, the shrimpers and the fishermen who were put out of business up there, who waited and waited and waited for some kind of a lawsuit. They're still waiting to be settled. They're still waiting 21 years later. These corporate sons of bitches do not care. Capitalism, remember, is about capital. It has nothing to do with the social fabric of a society. It has nothing to do with caring about the workers, about the families involved, about the safety of those workers. It cares nothing. Because it is not a living, breathing entity, regardless of what the Supreme Court recently ruled. Capitalism is about profit. Profit above all else. Profit or else. Profit, profit, profit. Human life is a useless, expendable, a little bit of glop that occasionally gets in their way. We had a situation down here near the coast in Savannah, where a sugar refinery plant that had been warned time and time again that the sugar dust was posing a horrendous risk for an explosion. Nobody paid any attention. The explosion occurred. I forget what the final death toll was. I think it was close to 20 people that were burned alive, just burned alive. The sugar company still operates. It doesn't mean a thing. Capitalism looks at human labor as the least of its worries. You know, don't screw up my drilling platform. Oh, it blew up. Oh, Jesus, what's that going to... What? 15 people died? Oh, that's no big deal. But how are we going to replace the drilling platform? You filthy, unconscionable bastards. We'll be back after the break. If you want to call in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. A couple of quick emails here about the use of the Navy subs, Alvin, as opposed to the manned. Are they manned? As opposed to these smaller subs that the oil company is using. Had an emailer last hour who said, you know, using the BP subs is kind of ridiculous when we have the Navy subs. Prairie 2 writes, the oil company robots are built for and match up to these underwater wells, and the operators know what they're doing. If the U.S. Navy went anywhere near the well, guess who would be blamed in the corporate media for the ongoing crisis? The turtles started washing up before the oil. And reports are they were killed by the emergency early shrimping season. Supposedly, the shrimp boats closed the turtle releases on their nets to maximize the shrimp harvest. You know, if that's the case, when they pull in those shrimp nets and there's a dead turtle, they just toss it. And Nick writes in, Mike, for what it's worth, the stated explanation why the unmanned submersible is enough is that it only turns on a switch. It isn't supposed to force the compression externally. Nick must be an engineer, because here it gets a little thick. The clamping mechanism is supposed to be done through stored internal hydraulic pressure that is released by the external signal. But obviously that didn't work. I wonder if the ocean pressure, 2,500 pounds per square inch, didn't destroy or overwhelm the mechanism. The test would be to put down another blowout protector into that depth and try to trigger it. Hell, they could do that in a static pressure test on dry land, Nick. Okay, I got about 20% of what you said, Nick, but thank you. I appreciate you writing, emailing. Shepard is in Ocala listening on XM. Shepard, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. You said about capitalism, it kind of shook me down a little bit.
The truth will do that to you.
Well, no, actually, capitalism to me is the greatest experience that I have ever had. I came from a family of liberals. You know, my father used to...
Well, tell me, I'm really not interested in your family history. Tell me how capitalism has been the greatest experience that ever happened to you. How did that work out?
Well, again, let me back up a little. I would always hear my mother say, you know, they were pro-union and they worshipped at
the
altar.
Well, wait a second. Seriously, I don't have time to listen to your family history. How did you called in about capitalism. How has it been so good for you?
Because I've been able to buy 5 new cars. I'm 49 years old. I have a home. I have insurance. Right now, I'm a limousine driver. And these so-called evil rich people.
No, wait a second. You're not going to out-yell me, Shepard. Are you out of your mind? In the first place, I don't think what you have done is capitalism. I think what you have done is what Thomas Jefferson talked about and I advocate, and that is small businesses. Capitalism is like BP. I don't think you and your 9 limousine, Shepherd, are ever going to get to the point where you're going to cause a huge ecological disaster that's going to imperil the planet. So you're not talking about capitalism, Shepherd. You're talking about entrepreneurship. You're talking about a small business owner. That's you. And what you've done by saving your money, maybe you borrowed a little bit, maybe you did go to the capitalists to borrow a little bit of money, but I wouldn't say that you're a capitalist at all. I think you're blowing the wrong horn. The system that made you successful is a system where I'm sure you took little incremental steps and you took your time and you built up your small business. There's a difference between that and capitalism. You got to understand, Shepard, apparently when you were in high school or if you went to university or college, whatever, you did not cover what capitalism really is. So here's what I suggest. I'm sure you have a very interesting family of liberals, as you put it. Go back and study capitalism, or not back, just go somewhere. Go online, go to, God forbid, you should walk into a library, but that might work too, and study what capitalism is, because I don't think you really have a handle on it. All right, Shepard? All right. Take care, buddy. Aye. Tom is in Arizona. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I got to say that Shepard is a poo-poo head. But anyway, besides that.
Poo-poo head?
Well, I don't want to get too graphic.
Yeah, okay.
I want to talk about this upcoming election here, the midterms. I'm in Arizona.
Right.
I'm an election poll worker. I'm a very active Democrat, and it's been, like, really superfluous to push this. Our leaders here, our local leaders, want us to call numbers and call people. And, you know, get insulted is like one of those jobs where you ever had that thing? You ever seen that guy? He's sitting there in the carnival and they're throwing like mud pies on him until he dunks in the thing.
Right.
That's what my job is, you know.
Well, why? What makes your job like that?
Well, because as soon as I say I'm calling from the Democratic Party, they start cussing me out.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah.
And so it's almost superfluous, you know. I mean, I think it's a wrong way to go. I think we need to. Get media. I mean, I want to get you on there. You need to talk to Dave Hayes at KTOX. Okay. All right. But anyway.
Well, I don't know who that is. I'm not familiar with. I'll tell you what. If you send me the call letters of station and somebody to contact, I'll have my business partner contact them.
Oh wow. Okay. I will. I mean, you know, people drag their feet. I'm going to do this. Okay. But anyway, I want to hear your take. Even after I hang up, if you would talk about it, I would love to hear what your prediction is for the midterms in regards to, I mean, do you think that the Hispanics are going to be intimidated by this Arizona law to come out and vote or not?
Well, no. I think people of Hispanic descent are going to vote if they have the right to vote. If they're citizens, I think they're going to do what they've always done. They're going to go vote.
I hear you, but I'm just telling you, I live here, and it's like they are staying inside, dude. I'm telling you, in my town, I mean, the guys that used to have the big old parties and stuff like that with the fantastic and the barbecues and stuff on the weekends, they're very quiet.
Well, I don't think Latinos are going to be intimidated by a bunch of white people running around screaming about go back home. If you have a right to vote, that means you're a citizen. That's the only way you can vote. And I don't think citizens of this country, regardless of their background, are going to be intimidated about voting.
Right. I hope you're right. But I just don't see it.
I don't know. I could be very, very wrong. As far as what's going to happen in the midterms, I think it's possibly going to be a reverse of what usually happens during midterm elections. What usually happens during midterm elections is whatever party has the White House will lose a certain number of seats in Congress. Not because that person is doing a bad job, but because I think Americans are inherently stupid where it concerns the political process. They don't know. They're easily motivated to throw the bums out. Now, granted, some bums need to be thrown out, but in the midterms this year, all the bums that need to be thrown out are Republican. They're Republican. Now, whether or not... normally, cretinous Republican voters will have the intelligence, the sense, the wisdom, to vote those thugs out, remains to be seen. I think the answer is clear. No, they won't. But I think given the mess that we are facing, and all of this stuff is hangover from 8 years of Bush-Cheney. People that want to lay this on Obama are out of their goddamn minds. This is hangover from Bush-Cheney. And... I don't know. I don't like to make political predictions unless it's obvious, but I don't think the Republicans are going to gain anything in the midterms. Thanks, Tom. Got a boogie. We'll be right back. Well,
synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Just a couple more items here in this kind of synopsis research that Tony in Maine put together today by checking non-mainstream sources. BP and the U.S. Coast Guard are dumping large amounts of dispersants, both on the surface and underwater, in a desperate attempt to control the ongoing spill. Dispersants are surfactants, not unlike what you use on your dishes, that break oil down into small droplets that sink into the water. How much are they dumping? Lots. According to ProPublica, quote, BP has already bought up more than a third of the world's supply, end quote, of dispersants. On Thursday alone, ProPublica reports, emergency workers dropped 100,000 gallons of the stuff into the Gulf. And what precisely are they dumping? That's where the mystery comes in. ProPublica reports, quote, the exact makeup of the dispersants is kept secret under competitive trade laws, end quote. God, I hate that. That's capitalism for you. Now, I heard, regarding that, I heard on a news report today that BP has stopped using these surfactants because all of a sudden they're starting to worry about what they've done, what they're pouring into the sea. So that's stopped. Six, the New York Times carried a piece the other day headlined, Gulf oil spill is bad, but how bad? That quoted an official of the Gulf of Mexico Foundation. A marine biologist named Quentin Dokin said the sky is not falling. And the executive director of the Gulf of Mexico Foundation, a conservation group in Corpus Christi, Texas, said, quote, we've certainly stepped in a hole. We're going to have to work ourselves out of it, but it isn't the end of the Gulf of Mexico, end quote. At least half of the 19-member board of directors on that the Gulf of Mexico Foundation, half of them have direct ties to the offshore drilling industry. One of them is currently an executive at Transocean, the company that owns the Deepwater Horizon rig that exploded last month, causing these millions of gallons of oil to spill into the Gulf. Seven other board members are currently employed at oil companies or at companies that provide products and services primarily to the offshore oil and gas industry. Those companies include Shell, ConocoPhillips, LLOG Exploration Company, Devon Energy, Anadarko Petroleum Company, and Oceaneering International. Son of a bitches. You know, that's the thing. These AstroTurf organizations, you know, something called the Gulf of Mexico Foundation. What does that make you think of? The Gulf of Mexico Foundation. First of all, with the word foundation in there, it makes you think of something that maybe has a endowment fund willed to it by dying liberals or dead environmentalists who say, you know, I'm going to leave $100 million to the Gulf of Mexico Foundation because, well, gosh, they do such good work. Gulf of Mexico implies that these rat bastards are really concerned about the Gulf of Mexico. Well, they are, but only insofar as they can crack open the bottom of the ocean and extract oil. There should be. See, when I become king of the world for a day, I will take people like this and toss them into the Gulf of Mexico, right out there around where the spill, not the spill, where the gusher is pumping millions of gallons into the ocean and destroying the Gulf of Mexico. That's what I would do to these bastards. How dare they call themselves the Gulf of Mexico Foundation, and half of them, I wonder what the other half, probably have direct ties to the weapons industry, but half of them have direct ties to the oil and gas industry, the offshore drilling industry. It's just infuriating. So these are the people saying, oh, well, the sky's not falling. We've certainly stepped in a hole. And we're going to have to work ourselves out of it, but it isn't the end of the Gulf of Mexico. I'll tell you what, let's play a game. Whoever said that, whichever one of you pig bastards said that, let's play a game. Let me sit you down and tie you to a swivel chair. And then what I'll do is take a 9mm Glock pistol, and I will hold it up against your left temple. And If we have stepped in a hole that we can't get out of, I'll pull the trigger. If we've stepped in a hole that we can get out of, as you say, then I'll put the weapon away. You want to play? You want to play that game? Huh? What do you care? How many people have already died because of this? How many people are going to die? You rat bastard. Gulf of Mexico Foundation, my nether parts. And then, of course, there is the loop current. We'll do that when we come back and also take some phone calls. Stick around. We have more to go. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a special.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, well, that's not here. Oh, I see. That was irony. There is some breaking news here that you may want to know about. Apparently, the Kennedy Bridge, the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge that links the Bronx and Manhattan has been shut down. There was a vehicle of some sort, U-Haul truck, heading across from the Bronx into Manhattan. The truck stopped. Or was stopped on the bridge. Witnesses say that the driver took off and ran. The police came immediately, and the cops backed off when there was a powerful odor of gasoline. So right now, I guess the hazmat or the bomb squad people are on their way. It's the RFK Bridge between the Bronx, I think, and Manhattan. It's near the Manhattan toll booth. And the van had Arizona plates, and it was a U-Haul, or not a van, but, well, yeah, some kind of a van. So that's a breaking news story. If you want more on this, I guess turn on CNN, and they should have some more information. All right, back to your phone calls. Brian is in Beverly Hills listening online. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I wanted to say I wanted to talk about the oil disaster.
Yeah.
I think cartographers need to get busy renaming the Gulf of Mexico the new Dead Sea.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh.
I know it's morbid, but anyway, I also feel like that they're going to try to, I don't think they're looking for the best solution for this. To plug this oil up, I think they're looking for the solution that's going to allow them to salvage as much of the oil as they can.
They being BP. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, of course.
And then,
because remember, this is capitalism. Capitalism doesn't care about people, the environment, social fabric of a society, jobs, nothing. It cares about profit, period.
Right. It's kind of like, they're kind of like drug fiends. You know,
you're right.
Somebody's house, kill their grandmother, and find those drugs, and that's all that they, that's the focus. That's the D-line of the focus.
That's it.
And I also feel that, you know, that this thing that Michael Brown was saying?
Yeah.
You know, I think they're trying to attack Barack for the wrong thing. They should be attacking him for saying he's for offshore oil drilling, and then look what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in my eyes, Barack's kind of appearing like a little bit of, you know, I don't know what word to use, but, you know, like a kind of foolish, you know, like, I was for this, and now look what's going on. How am I going to defend this? And I think, you know, back to Michael Brown, I think it's sort of preemptive that they know exactly, I mean, if Barack does the right thing, they know that, you know, he's going to denounce this and probably, possibly not allow it to continue on in the future.
You know, I don't, I'm not sure I understand how the allocation of these sites and who they go to, if they're leases that are bid on and auctions, who holds the auction, who authorizes, is it the president, is it the Congress, is there some government agency? I really don't know. I don't know if Obama has the power to order it or not order it, whether it's nuclear power plants down here in Georgia or offshore drilling in the Gulf. I know he's the one that makes the announcement.
Right, right.
But I honestly don't know. I'm sure somebody will send that information to us here, or I'll do the research myself. But I'm not sure how that works. I heard this crazy ass comment today someplace. Maybe I read it. Maybe it was Limbaugh. Maybe because Limbaugh is really losing it. I mean, he's just going right into the toilet. But the idea that what Obama did was make the statement about, yeah, we're gonna go ahead and do some offshore drilling, and then he sent a team of saboteurs out there to blow this thing up.
Right, exactly.
So that, oh my God, I mean, what? Why in the hell is going on? So that he could then say, okay, we're going to end all drilling in the Gulf. I mean, this is madness.
That's what I was saying. That Michael Brown was. I think he was saying that because if in the end, you know, Barack or whoever comes out and says, you know, we simply cannot do this anymore, which is what he should say. If I don't know if we can do anything about it, but he should say we absolutely, positively cannot go in this direction anymore in the future. No,
I don't know.
If he says that, then Michael Brown is right. You know what I mean? He's going to say, oh, you know, now he actually did, you know, side with the environmentalists.
Oh God, let's not let that happen. You know, the thing about Michael Brown, Brian, is I'm trying to figure out why anybody, and I understand he was on CNN tonight on Anderson Cooper's program, why would anyone want to talk about Michael Brown about anything except maybe raising horses or how to hot walk a thoroughbred after you've taken him out and run the hell out of her? But why would anyone want to talk about Michael Brown? What the hell is CNN doing giving a corrupt loser bastard like Michael Brown airtime at all? Hey, I got to leave it there, Brian. Thanks. You know, why not bring Karl Rove? Well, they have, haven't they? Why not bring Dick Cheney on CNN and ask him about U.S. foreign policy where it concerns how to make peace in the Middle East? You know, what the hell is Michael Brown out there for anything? Son of a bitch belongs in jail someplace. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Okay.
I have a slight theory about what you were just talking about with Limbaugh and the Republicans bringing up that the theory that Obama sent someone down to blow up the rig.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to make Bush look better. Like, remember, they're trying to use facts that we knew about Bush that made him look bad and come up with stories about Obama to make him look bad. Like, Bush didn't complete his tour of duty when he was in the military.
Right.
Well, he didn't deserve to be president for that. Well, Obama wasn't born in the country. He doesn't deserve to be president. Well, Bush was behind and didn't respond well to 9/11. Well, Obama blew up the rig.
Right.
He doesn't deserve it.
And that's where this crazy, insane, false equivalency
right.
comes up by corporate media. They do this all the time. I mean, this is insane. It's, you know, once again, it's just more insanity.
And I think it's not going to work because a lot of the people that were on the left that were doing this weren't getting the airtime to put this up. Because the Republicans are putting out, it's being put all over the place, and I think the independents are going to look and say, these people are nuts.
I hope.
Vote for them.
I hope
that's what's going to happen, too.
I hope. That's of course, the people who vote for these morons are so brain dead. I mean, you could set a bomb off in their house, and they, you know, they would not hear it unless Glenn Beck showed up and said, listen, Obama just blew your house up.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are desperately stupid, so okay. they may go ahead and vote for these candidates like this J.D. Hayworth out in Arizona. I don't think I've ever seen anybody who, first of all, he looks like he eats human flesh. He looks like a cannibal. Have you seen this guy, the one running against McCain?
Yeah.
I mean, he does. Honest to God, he looks like a cannibal. He looks like he sits down and eats chunks of human flesh. And he's a moron to begin with.
Right. Well,
but because he's saying things that the brain dead voters in Arizona want to hear, they'll probably elect him. It's astonishing. Just astonishing. I think it'll be a good kick in the ass, though, for John McCain. You know, McCain is such a flip flopper, such a waffler. And he's also a war criminal. He's also a coward. God only knows how many people he bombed in North Vietnam and took their lives. So, you know, McCain probably needs to be defeated and sent someplace where he can deal with his conscience in the darkness of night. But this animal looking J.D. Hayworth, who honestly looks like a predatory, some kind of a predator that you know, jumps out of the bushes invisible and scares the hell out of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, it's that time of night where the coughing commences. Oh, good. Joel is in Berkeley, Berkeley, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Joel.
Yeah, hey, Mike. How are you doing? I actually sent you an email about this. I want to go back to the Arizona law and voter intimidation.
Okay.
Not really intimidation exactly, but Greg Palast has actually been on, both Hartman and Stephanie Miller, talking about this, and he's got a piece up on Truth Out on his own website.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea is that the Republicans in Arizona know that they're electoral toast unless they can somehow stop the demographic juggernaut. They've got all these you know, Latino voters, citizens, legal citizens, who are registering to vote. They're voting and registering overwhelmingly Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Brewer, Jan Brewer, now governor, when she was Secretary of State in 2004, was responsible for purging about 100,000 Hispanic voters. And the basic idea of this law, should it go into effect, you can imagine, November 2nd, there'll be Republican operatives, you know, fanning out into Democratic precincts all across Arizona.
Right.
Show me your papers. And if you don't have the papers, they'll threaten voters, legal voters, standing in line with arrest, and mm-hmm. they may even arrest a whole bunch of them. So that's basically the scenario, and Greg Palast, you know, details it further in his piece. And
right, and I'm sure Brad Friedman at bradblog.com has a lot of this stuff up, too. The voter suppression idea is something that Friedman and Palast have worked on for a long time.
That's right.
That's one of those scenarios where, I hate to say this, but I would like to be standing in that line and with a baseball bat and just let some pasty face SOB come up and ask me for my papers. Oh, my God.
Oh, they won't ask you, Mike.
Well, I could make myself look, quote, quote, Latino.
Fair enough.
Don't forget I'm Italian anyway. Hey, thanks, Joel. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be right back.
Night network TV shows with celebrities smiling in their famous clothes, sitting pretty, stating witticisms on success to a cackling clown behind a cardboard desk in the late night talk boards to pacify the duty board. Corporations made to the nose to bring us late night.
Before the hour, Michael, who lives in the Bronx, sent me this about the RFK Triborough Bridge situation. And Michael writes, there's a U-Haul mini truck on the bridge by the Manhattan Span, Manhattan bound, and the smell described, according to local reports here in New York City, was that the truck was leaking fluid, most likely gasoline, and the truck had broken down. The guy in question was said to be running for help. There's a gas and service station at the end of the bridge exit ramp onto 2nd Avenue and East 125th Street. But given what has occurred over the weekend in Times Square, authorities were not about to take any chances and minimize the possible severity of the matter, which explains the police presence on the bridge itself. All traffic to and from Manhattan, whether from Bronx or from Queens, temporarily closed, yada, yada, yada. All right, thanks, Michael. And Tony in Maine, who had sent this in, I'm going to get back the phones here in just a second. The 7th, he did a lot of research today and came up with this stuff. He tried to avoid television. Number 7 on his list, government officials and scientists from Mississippi to Florida are holding their collective breath to see whether a strong but unpredictable current in the Gulf of Mexico, known as the Loop Current, will continue to expand north toward Louisiana. 2 days ago, the latest time for which satellite data are available, the current sat 125 miles south of the spill, its rotating tendrils licking at the slick's eastern edge. Oceanographer at the University of South Florida has long warned of the flow's potential impact on his state, said it's a very important concern. The loop current is actually moving toward the oil. For the current to begin conveying the oil at any volume, it would still have to surge much further north, which some computer models like Weisberg's are predicting. And as of today, May 5th, the massive slick has spread to 3,500 square miles, about the size of Puerto Rico. Good God. Till is in Austin, Texas, listening online. Hey, Till.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. I made a short list of some what I think, you know, government and businesses either have or potentially have exposed us to reckless endangerment. The first one, completely unnecessary. First is mad cow disease, meaning, you know, animal products to cattle that are herbivores. The next one is not necessarily in order, chronological order. The Glass-Steagall, repealing Glass-Steagall, they've devastated the economy for, you know, there was no
right
to do that. The next one was the Cassinage spacecraft that had a plutonium battery and it was slingshot around the Earth. If that had burned up in the atmosphere, you know, it would have made a really mess.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this acoustic shutoff valve, you know, $500,000 valve on something that pulls in billions of dollars a year.
Right.
They're just exposing us to these crazy, reckless things, but there's no need for them to do it. I mean, it's like driving your car with your eyes closed. Why?
Well, it goes back to capitalism. Capitalism never factors in human life as being something that one shouldn't destroy. It just doesn't. So if there are situations where people die or the potential is there for people to die, a capitalist enterprise doesn't factor that in. If they do factor it in, they factor it in only on a cost analysis basis. How much will it cost them per human life? This was the argument that I think, who was it? Was it Ralph Nader made way back in the early 60s with the book Unsafe at Any Speed about the Chevy Corvair? That had the exploding gas tanks. People were dying all over the country, getting hit from the rear, and the gas tank would explode. And all it would have taken to prevent that would have been a relatively inexpensive part or barricade or whatever it was. And, you know, we're talking about something from damn near 50 years ago now.
I think the Corvair, I think, had that the half shaft. It had a U joint on.
Right, whatever it was penetrating the gas tank and causing an explosion. And that's my point exactly. You know, I get a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls from people that think I'm crazy about capitalism. I couldn't care less what they think. It doesn't matter to me what people think about capitalism being a good system. It is a poisonous, destructive, murderous system. And as far as those examples you just gave, you know, to expect corporate America or capitalism to act responsibly is to believe in fairies. I mean, why would it happen? There is no cost benefit in acting, you know, for these corporations to act responsibly. There is none. And it doesn't make any difference. Look, they're recalling. Johnson & Johnson has a distributor now that is recalling all sorts of children's medicine. Why? Because the bacterial count may be too high. Get that. Get the modifier there, too. There may be little pieces of metal. Maybe the active ingredient is not in the proportion that it says on the label. All kinds of stuff. Now, we are to believe that Johnson & Johnson's stable of God knows how many scientists, how many quality control people didn't notice that. Of course they noticed it, but they figure, well, it's not going to kill anybody, at least we hope it won't, and even if it does wipe out a couple of kids, what would be better? Recalling the drug, which will cost us millions, or paying a couple of lawsuits, which will take forever to settle? We can stall it, get it down to maybe 50 grand per kid. These are rancid, rotten sons of bitches, Till. Every single capitalist in America could not care less about human life. That's not what capitalism is about. It's never been. It never will be. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.